Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, on Bay Sacks and Jacks, I'm Tomorrow Ricky on the board. S&P futures down 50 cents after a big up day yesterday. NASDAQ futures up over another $16. Gold getting whopped again today. Interesting change in a lot of the markets the last few days. Do we have Professor Carl?
You do.
Hey, I have a... If you don't know the answer to this, we'll go straight onward. But I thought maybe, out of all the people I know, you might know what all these guys are talking about. Boy, the listeners, just hang with. It's pretty interesting, I think. Well, we'll see in a second if it is. The question was, why is China's Fujian aircraft carrier's electronic magnetic catapult system better than that of the U.S. Gerald Ford?
It's not.
This guy claims it's better by an nth degree.
Well, of course he does. Well, because you have to have, you know, phantasmagorial crazy claims in order to sell things like clicks.
Well, he's talking about something that
Let me explain. Okay.
All right. He's talking about AC/DC bus bar.
I know where he's going with it.
Okay.
He's wrong.
Okay.
Okay. And the reason he's wrong is because a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier has fewer conversions necessary to drive the steam-powered catapult. All right. Every energy conversion involves loss. Every one. There are no exceptions. That's thermodynamics.
Okay.
All right. A nuclear-powered aircraft carrier has a giant tea kettle in the bottom. Well, it's not really very big, but it makes a lot of steam. All right, which is what drives the aircraft carrier. That's what also drives the catapult. Therefore, as long as the nuclear reactor is working, which, by the way, is necessary for the aircraft carrier to move.
All right. You're on the wrong ship.
No.
Evidently, the Gerald Ford, the newest one, does not have a steam catapult. It has an EM.
I understand this.
All right.
The problem with all of these setups is that we have taken... By the way, the Gerald Ford has had all kinds of problems with their EM-driven one. Okay? The most important, the whole point of an aircraft carrier is to be able to launch and recover aircraft. Duh, right? That's why you call it an aircraft carrier. Anything that gets in the way of doing that in a war is bad. Now, which is more likely for you to have a problem? For you to not have access to steam? If that's the case, you're dead in the water. Or to not have access to high-energy electrical impulse and the coils and everything else necessary to drive this thing, which, by the way, can get damaged and is a hell of a lot harder to fix if it does than what you got with the steam unit.
Well, he claims that we have to use a flywheel, which I remember from the Pullman plants, to help the EM system.
No surprise.
Okay, but he says that the Chinese using something called an AC/DC/AC power conversion, where they actually can store the electric in the DC part for use in the second AC part, which is much more sophisticated, according to him.
Okay, so he's got a big capacitor in there. What happens when I blow it up?
Well, he's saying that the people who make those things now, his whole point here is some of the stuff, we always think that, well, all China does is copy us. And his point is, they're not really. And some of this stuff, they're way ahead of us.
Well, that may or may not be true. But my argument is that this is a BS design driven by things other than the fact that the anything that damages or threatens to damage the reason you have the military asset is stupid.
All right,
that's my point.
Well, here's essentially the bottom line is that there's only one problem. You got to have the technology to build that central DC power storage section of the system. Through the immense instantaneous power requirement and limited space on board an aircraft carrier, you must have durable capacitors that can both charge and discharge quickly and hold a large amount of energy. Those are commonly referred to as supercapacitors. They're used in many industrial applications such as power grid stability, electrical car fast charging, etc. He claims that the leading country by far in the field of supercapacitors is China, and we better catch up. This is essentially his bottom line here.
Yeah, well, okay. I think it's the... I would argue that it is true that this is something that we ought to become much better at, okay? I mean, you know, generally electronics is something that we should have... You know, we should not allow other countries to be in front of, especially when they do so through various wage and environmental arbitrage that we're not willing to, we're not willing to do. In the commercial environment, that's the argument for tariffs. In the military environment, tariffs are rather ineffective when you're getting bombed to smithereens, right? So there's two separate aspects to this. But the polemic that the correct answer to launching aircraft is electromagnetics is...
Well, he goes on to say the U.S. does... We're talking about the difference between this and the steam catapult. And he goes, well, you know, fun fact, U.S. doesn't have the technology to build new steam catapults either. It's the last of the U.S. companies that makes those went bankrupt a couple of years back.
We have all kinds of insanity within our procurement and defense environment, much of which has come from the fact that we don't care about this thing called 15 USC Chapter 1. It's not just in the medical system. We just let everybody merge into everybody else and then offshore all of the things that aren't supposedly requiring security, whatever have you. And so you end up with situations like Lockheed Martin can't manage to actually keep competent people around because they think that squeezing the worker is a good idea, giving them 3% wages and a 12% inflation economy is a good idea, and the people that actually work there say, up yours and leave and go somewhere else.
Well, yeah, well, we have a... They're talking about for the steam catapults, you need the big long... For those that don't know, you push... The thing gets behind the plane. The plane... World War II, the planes took off on their own. Now that you need you have a catapult that gets them from zero to whatever 180 miles an hour, pretty damn fast.
Yeah, the problem is that the acceleration curve, the thrust curve on a jet engine requires airflow into the intake, and so you can't accelerate the plane from zero to flight speed rapidly enough on the length of the deck you have.
Well, plus you don't want to use the length of the deck. You don't want to lose because you want to be able to retrieve planes and take off at the same time.
Well, you can't use the whole length.
That's what I'm saying. World War II, you did.
Right, but even if you could, it probably wouldn't work.
It'd be a struggle.
Yeah, that's why they don't. So I mean, you want the cats for the ability to.
This is insane. The guy's talking about the. Well, anyway, for the length of the run, you have to have these really highly machined. Precision tubes because you're forcing a boatload of steam through there, right? Well, duh. Those are now made in China.
Well, okay. You know, the idea that it's all okay to offshore all sorts of industrial production because we're never going to have a problem with needing to do that here because the people we offshore to will either never be an adversary, okay, as opposed to an ally. That will never, ever happen.
Well, especially if you have a guy who pisses them all off all day long.
Well, it's also a question if you're offshoring to a country that is and has been for the last, 500 years, communist.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there is a reason that it's, you know, the PLA, it has the name that it does, okay, which, yeah, of course, is the military side of the government. So, yeah, I mean, this is a nation that throughout, and by the way, this is also a nation throughout history that has a history of undergoing violent revolutions that lead to very different governmental leadership, not necessarily philosophy, but leadership. Right. And suddenly all those deals you thought you had look like a big bag of barf.
Well, if not recommending everybody go tromping through this book, but I had heard a little bit about, you know, some of the World War II stuff and the Marshall Plan. Yeah. And then I finally got my paws on this book, George Marshall, Soldier and Statesman, which I read, you know, spectacularly through. I mean, every chapter I thought was unreal. I mean, his early life and the Indian War, the wars against Pancho Villa and how screwed up we were down there, and stuff like the Spanish-American War, that the troop ship left an hour before the food ship showed up, that kind of thing. And just but what little known fact is, everybody thinks, well, right after World War II, if you were to ask people on the street, they would say, well, Marshall went right over to Europe and started doing stuff. Well, that's not true at all. It is not true. He actually retired and got in his car and drove home. And while he was driving up the driveway, was he in Virginia or someplace? The phone's ringing and it's like, Truman, hey, yeah, you got to come back. Well, is actually, they put this guy Morgenthau in front of the head of the Europe situation, who pretty much, I'm not saying he didn't know anything, but he didn't do a very good job. So they sent Marshall over to China to negotiate the peace between Chiang Kai-shek and Mao Zedong. And I don't know how long he was over there. It was a while. His wife went with him. She, of course, hated it. He, after about, I don't know, was it like 9 months, 12 months, he just writes back at Truman, you got to get me out of here. These guys are idiots. I can't, there's no way that they don't care how many people they kill, they don't care what, there's no intention whatsoever of anybody getting this thing together and making a country out of this thing. It's just, you got to get me, I'm absolutely useless. And then they brought him back to the U.S., then sent him to Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
But he said that was like, it was absolutely impossible to do anything. Yeah, he didn't know which one was worse, Mao or Chiang Kai-shek. They're both two peas in the same pod.
Well, that's, I mean, this is, people, one of the biggest problems we have, I think, Chief, is that we selectively edit history to, it's actually kind of fascinating because, like, my daughter, she's 29 now, right? But of course, she went through school in a completely different time period than I went through school, right? And I do a weekly podcast with her. And the number of things over the years that she's never heard of during the time she was in school, that nonetheless are historical facts, is astounding.
Oh, yeah.
It's just astounding. I mean, these are things that were front and center in my history classes all through my childhood. Right? I mean, and she's never heard them. Right? Now, she's not mentally defective. Even if she didn't know the fine details, if they'd been brought up, she'd remember the fact that it was discussed.
It's like there was a Civil War, that type of thing.
Well, things like this, right? I mean, and some of this stuff, I mean, like the whole thing about, the run-up to World War I, the Balfour Declaration, how is it? The insanity, when you think about it, how is it that this third level dignitary, the Archduke, gets assassinated and all of a sudden everyone shoots each other?
Well, it wasn't all of a sudden.
Well, I understand that, but the thing is that it made absolutely no sense that would set it off. I mean, you look at the
situation.
Well,
if he wouldn't have got, first little fact,
something else would have
caused. The guys missed him on the way to wherever the hell he was going.
No, he
came back on the same route, and they go, hey, oh, there he is again. Let's shoot him now.
There he is again. Let's shoot him again. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, here's the thing is, though, it's like the same situation occurred, with Bosnia, in that all the way up to the point that people actually started shooting, none of the factions there, and there were several, none of the factions actually thought it would happen. All right, and I mean, they all were mad at each other. They were all had their own idea of, what the country should look like, which was very different than, what they had at the time, right? I mean, but none of them actually thought that everyone would grab guns. And yet, as soon as the first shots were fired, everybody grabbed guns.
Well, there was a don't know where the hell it is. I think I might have lost it in my parents' basement. There was a book, something about the fall of the dynasties, and it had it was basically, it had different chapters on every one of the Hohenzollerns and the Ottoman Empire and the what were the guys in Russia?
The Bolsheviks.
No. What was the royal family?
Oh, I don't remember the name.
The Hohenzollerns were one place, and who were the guys in Germany? The Habsburgs were in Austria. The Romanovs, wasn't it?
I think so.
Anyway, they went through every single one of them was going, and I think the French still had some semblance, not much of one. Not Britain, they weren't the same, but the massive population growth all over the place. You had kind of an industrial revolution. The arms race was dramatic, even though nobody even knew why. Everybody just, the arms race was huge. You had planes going now, you had other kinds of stuff. And it was just, and these guys were decaying from the inside, every one of them, so dramatically that they, with all these different pressures, I just wonder, you know, if you had an alternative history book and they would have missed the Duke, I give it 6 months where we started somewhere else.
It just was
going to start.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, you know, Tsar Nicholas was executed, okay, which was, you know, which was the Russian Revolution.
But that's after the war started.
But that's what ended the Romanov. That's what ended the Romanov dynasty.
Right.
Okay.
Well, they killed him and all the family and the cousins and everybody.
Right. They killed the entire family.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, that was this guy's related to him. He may not be in the government now, but you know, that's fine. Off to the guillotine you go. It was that kind of thing. And so the thing is that we look at, you know, we do not as a country, and we've done this for decades, Chief, we don't look at this kind of stuff as, you know, oh, it's not important that we have steel over here in the United States. We can, you know, let's offshore that to China.
Oh, yeah.
We don't care about producing precision ball bearings. They're not important in anything like, you know, jet engines, as an example. That's not an important thing, right? And then you have the sort of, you know, nonsense that we have that goes on now with, you know, so-called green power. Oh, you know, if we build these lithium batteries somewhere else, you know, I just got into it with somebody about this, in fact, because they were arguing the other side of the argument that, you know, that green energy, battery-powered cars, solar panels, and this and the other thing. I said, you realize solar panels are made with a vacuum sputtering process, okay, in order to actually deposit the active material on the stuff. All right, this has capacity problems in that it's actually a fairly complex thing to do. But the other problem that this generates is that it makes the panels essentially non-recyclable, because the cost of recovery of the material, which includes some rare earths and includes some pretty toxic stuff, is so high that it makes absolutely no sense. It's the same problem you have with lithium batteries. The current lithium battery technology that's used, technically any chemical reaction can be reversed. Okay, so you can recycle anything. However, the energy requirements to do it is so high that it makes no sense. Now, when you buy a car battery for your regular car or your truck, you get charged an advanced disposal fee. It's basically a core charge.
You do now, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing with tires, same thing with oil, right? And the reason is to encourage you to bring the other one back and rather than throw it in a landfill. And the thing is, though, is that there's enough economic value in the material in that battery that all I got to do is pay you enough to get you to bring it back and to transport it to where it gets dismantled, because it has positive economic value to take it apart and recycle the components.
It's value to the guy you bring it to.
Well, I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That when you get down to it, I have.
It's not like you bring it back and then it costs the guy $50 to do it safely. He makes money on it.
He makes money on it.
Yeah.
The material's valuable to him. Okay, so you have to pay somebody to transport it and to incentivize you not to throw it in the trash, but not the other way around. And by the way, the battery that's in your car right now was made with recycled components for that reason. All right. Now, the problem with these other things is that that's not true. So if you were to assess an advanced disposal fee on solar panels and batteries, they cost three times as much as they do today, right? And no one would buy them.
Well, the interesting part about what we were talking about the military thing is not like the military doesn't pay up. I mean, it's not like they're not...
Well, of course they do. But, Chief, we all want to pretend that these kinds of nonsensical decisions that we make from an economic perspective in the United States make sense. You take a look at, for example, the fight that's going on right now, and an article about it this morning, with the whole healthcare thing and the shutdown, okay? The screaming, and it's coming from both sides of the aisle, is that, oh my God, these subsidies, which, by the way, the Biden administration deliberately did on a non-permanent basis because the impact on the budget and the deficit and the, therefore the CBO scoring was going to be so huge that they made them so that they would go away. Okay, they did that on purpose. That was a policy decision. All right, now the time has come. And in order to extend them, that impact would be there. It would be scored and it would happen. The problem is the yelling that you're hearing is not, I'm going to stick a gun in your face, Chief, and make you pay my health insurance. Okay, so you're going to pay for my health care. Whether you like it or not, you're going to pay. No. It's that the cost, you will have a cheaper cost if the subsidies are extended.
Well, the people that...
No, you won't.
Well, if you did it right, hey, just one more comment on the stuff with the Army and the steam cat Army, the Navy.
Yeah.
Steam. I think a lot of it has to do, Colonel, is we don't... I'll take 2 minutes to talk about this conversation I had with then-Mayor Daley. At the club, he was in the same health club as me, or I was in the same, whatever you want to call it. We were in a club together, and I work for Pullman. And
right.
He said, well, you know, if we go out and build railroad cars, so now why is Pullman not here? And he said, well, I'd like to see them made in the city.
Right.
And I said, well, Mayor, I was, I don't know how many people are left around, but I was probably the... I wasn't high up the chain, but I knew a lot about the contract that we were building and
right.
what it would take to build it. Doesn't mean I could design it or stamp metal number one. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not. I said, but you know, you've lost all that expertise.
Right.
I said it's like gone. I said,
there's a
Walmart there. I mean, we're not talking about. I said, but he goes, well, how did that? Who destroyed it? I said, people like you.
Right.
He goes, what do you mean? I said, well, you have to maintain the technology. I said, look at your CTA cars. This is a few years ago, because they've been out for a while. I said, you're going to go out for 300 cars, right?
Right.
He goes, well, yeah. I said, when was the last time you bought them? 15
yeah.
years ago? What's the place supposed to do in the meantime? Sit on their ass?
I said, well, that's the same thing that happened with the masks. When we had the pandemic, right? There was a factory down in Texas that made N95s. All right, and during the swine flu, not the one in the 1970s, but the last time it came around, which was 27 something like 07 or something like that, they tooled up because all the hospitals needed them, and all these medical clinics needed them. Everybody needed them, and okay, great. They couldn't get them from China fast enough, so they bought them from them. These guys tooled up. 6 months later, the flu epidemic is over, and they all went back to buying China because they were cheaper. Okay, well, the guy built out his plant for this, and then he got screwed.
Yeah,
and so he's like, I'm not doing that again. And then everyone's yelling at him that he's an evil, un-American SOB because he won't do this. He's like, look, you guys stuck me with a huge capital loss the last time. And you don't really think, and I mean, somehow they managed to stay in business. He says, you don't really think I'm stupid enough to do that again, do you?
Well, I mean, it's back when I could think a little quicker on my feet. I said, so Mayor, he goes, what would it, I said, first of all, if you wanted me to start a firm right now, I'm probably one of the few guys that maybe could make a stab at it. Let me help you. We'd have to start with like refurbishing buses or something, just to
right.
get some people in the place, and then After a while, maybe we'd refurbish some light railroad cars like CTA. It would take a while before we'd take an RTA car. I said, all of a sudden we have to build this expertise. I don't know if I can hire it. I don't know if these guys are all dead. I said, plus we got to get a plant. We got to get a crane. We got to get all this stuff. And I said, plus if we decided to do a design build contract, who in God's name is gonna give us a, what do you call it? Thing from the bank that says you can do it. What do you call that? Okay, I'm going brain dead.
You know, with a letter of credit?
No, it's a performance bond.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So
yeah,
who the hell is going to give us a performance bond? It's going to take... I mean, Pullman never reneged on a contract in 20 years. I don't think they even had to pay for the damn thing. I said, who's going to give us one? He goes, well, how should it be done? I'll tell you. I said, you got CTA cars here? And he goes, well, yeah. I said, let me guess. You got 1,000 of them. They last 20 years.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, that's probably about right. I said, okay. So what does that come down to? That's 50 a year, which is basically one a week.
Right.
So there should be a plant here that they're permanently married pairs. There's two cars can't be separated. So every 2 weeks, you guys should get a new pair. And one at the end of the line at 20 years should roll off and be scrapped.
The oldest one gets trashed.
And after 12 years, they come back through the plant and get totally redone. So every month, the plant is building two cars and they're refurbishing two. Now, they might have another couple contracts refurbishing RTA cars and stuff. But for the purpose of the CTA, plus if some problem comes up, one of the trucks has a problem, you've got a plant that's right that you can get to by rail. You can drive the car over there,
right?
And you can, if there's a retrofit, you can do it right there. So that's the sane way to do this and keep these people working. Doesn't mean, you know, God forbid, if somebody wants to do better, they can do better. I said, but there's no way anybody could really compete with that firm, because there might be another firm here that does RTA cars or something. But he goes, I said, because Pullman had welding machines just waiting, hanging in the corner in case you got a big contract. You could go buy all this stuff new. So all the punch presses and everything they throw out. Do you imagine if you had to go buy that stuff from day one?
Oh yeah.
And who the hell's going to do it? I mean, plus a crane that can pick a railroad car up and move it over another railroad car. I mean, good Lord. He's looking at me like I had four heads. I mean, and he's a really bright guy. It just wasn't his. You know, now I would say that if you have this catapult system, the steam one that the guy's talking about here, first of all, in my opinion, instead of having these 10 monster carriers, we should have some smaller ones for stuff like going on in the Caribbean. You don't need the Gerald Ford down there, sorry Trump. Where it should be these things come in after 18 months at sea, they're totally trashed, they're replaced, kind of everything. These guys should be working on a new catapult a month and then redoing an old one, and maybe one of these new ships that I'd like think we should have. They should be working on one or two a month. Steady stuff. 80 people working there year after year after year. That's not what we're doing. We never do it that way. It's all or none.
Yeah. Well, but Chief, this is, you know, we do not have anyone who's willing to put the, I mean, you know, you look at the mess that's going on right now from a budget, you know, just in the MTS, okay? And I know, I bang on this drum, you know, all the time, right?
Well, no doubt.
But that's because it's the biggest drum to hit, right? And that's this crap going on in the medical system. And, you know, as an example...
It's hands-off, though, Carl. Everybody's hands-off on everybody. I don't know why. I'm with you.
Chief,
you have nobody agreeing with you more than you on it. But I don't see it changing at all.
Chief, it's hands-off because nobody cares about the truth of any of these things. Nobody cares about actual results. All anyone cares about, all anyone has ever cared about, is the money. Well, and it's the same thing here.
I'm going to say that when Biden came out and said, now granted, it was only for Medicare and whatever, he came out and he named 10 drugs. And the one I always go back to is his Eliquis, because I know a bunch of my friends now are just on it again. And he named this early in his term. What did everybody rush into the Oval Office and say, what are you doing, Joe? You can't do anything about this. You're out of your mind. We can't get this. It went nowhere. Trump's first term, he mentioned something about getting drug prices down. Now this term, he's for sure getting them down. He hasn't done squat, and he's not about to.
Well, Chief, it's not just drug prices, okay? But that's the one that, you know, I mean, that's easy to find, the MTS, because it's exploded, right?
Yeah, but it's not just there. I'm talking about in people's pocketbooks. That's why they're broke.
Of course it's not just there. All right.
Yeah.
You think that only 65 and up people buy health care?
Well, yeah.
Come on. Let's be real about this. All right. It's everybody. But the thing is, let's just take an example. We got this garbage that runs around that, you know, vaccines do not cause autism. Right? It's been debunked. There's no scientific study that has ever shown a correlation. Now, this is what all the people in the pharmaceutical and medical system will tell you.
The question is, what kind of studies do they do?
Well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I have a guy who's on my forum who has a kid that is now an adult that immediately following being jabbed lost all of his developmental cognitive ability. He is severely autistic and is never going to be able to live independently ever. All right. So needless to say, there's a huge problem down the road. Now, this guy's quite successful and he's able to.
How do you contrast that with one of the guys who's come on the show? Hopefully he's downtown. Maybe he will if his company lets him in. His son is nonverbal autistic.
Yeah.
And he said they knew it right away before he had his first jab.
Well, and it's not always caused.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's such a varied thing. It's hard to pin down.
Well, absolutely. Okay, but here's the thing. This guy has done the work. He's gone through all the stuff that's on the NIH's pages. Okay, on our own NIH, he's found over 24 studies that have a positive correlation. And we're not talking small hazard ratio differences either. We're talking 2.0, which is 200%, so double the likelihood. Okay,
What is considered?
There's two decades worth of science on this, for Christ's sake.
I know what is considered. You know, it's a long time since I had any statistics. When I told you about the Korean incidence of cancer of people who had been in Vietnam,
yeah,
it's 29% versus 24% in the general population. Right. How significant is it? I would think that's pretty significant, but what do you need to have to be significant? 2, 3, 4? I mean, I don't know the answer.
Well, so it depends on the sample size, okay, because that's the way statistics works, right? The larger the sample, the smaller the delta in outcomes that you can have and meet statistical significance, all right?
We also need something that's really random.
Well, yeah, but then, you know, there is a process. It's mathematics that gives you the p-value, which is basically what is the probability that this thing that you're observing is random chance, okay? And typically speaking, when you see p-values of, you know, 0.02, that's not random chance,
yeah.
All right? Or less than 0.01, which is kind of the, you know, the gold standard in medical stuff. However, you know, p-values that are, you know, 0.1 and smaller are almost certainly not chance. Okay, they're almost certainly caused. So there is, but this is, you know, you look at some of these things and the statistical arm waving that goes on within some of these areas. It's the same sort of nonsense that goes on in other areas of the economy. I mean, you know. The defense that you have going on right now with all these people about this stuff with AI, you know, I sent this thing to the list yesterday. If you take the CapEx, just the announced CapEx over the last 12 months from companies, and this is just what they've put in a 10-K.
I'm glad you're going down here because I want you to explain yesterday to me.
Yeah. Okay. So yesterday was, I mean, this is very interesting. You take our GDP, which of course comes out quarterly, right? And that is, you know, the sum total of everything, right?
Well, it used to come out quarterly. We don't know now.
Well, we don't. Yeah, you know, there's been a shutdown. So, you know, maybe it'll come out next week. Maybe it won't. Who knows? So you take the GDP advance and you subtract from it the 10K and 10Qs, from the Ks and the Qs, the prior 12 months. Okay, so same period of time, CapEx on AI. And this is just what's been announced. So this is public companies, private firms, things that are not required to file annual and quarterly reports don't count. which of course is, you know, decent number of companies out there, right? Yeah. That are not that don't file because they're not required to. You take those and you subtract that off, and what you find is that for all intents and purposes, the economy is not expanding at all.
I think if you were to take the a real CPI number, it's not expanding at all either.
Well, here, by the way, if you take the, if you then adjust for CPI, it's negative.
It's been negative.
I'm talking about gross. I'm talking about gross number here. I'm not talking about the, you know, the inflation adjusted, right? The so-called real GDP as opposed
to. Well,
if
you pull the medical piece out, what people are paying there, the other stuff people have been dragging at for 25 years, if you ask me.
Oh yeah, and it's and this is you know, the thing is though is that you look at what's going on in the markets. And the market says we have a 6 or 10% economy. No, we don't.
Well, I mean, the day like yesterday, which I thought was very, two things. One is the fact that gold's going the other way with the market. But yesterday looks to me like we're just absolutely awash in cash. We should get the money supply numbers finally today, right? Now, if they're not cheating, I know. Does every number have to be run by the Oval Office now or what?
Oh, God. Who knows?
You know what I heard? Just when you think about somebody, you don't like to keep poking at somebody, but I heard something yesterday from some of our guys in Washington that Trump is trying to buy, or already has bought, this municipal golf course in Washington.
What?
And he's trying to make it into some kind of a Trump resort. Well, the course is a municipal golf. It's not that high end or anything.
Right.
So
right.
It doesn't have any hills or anything. Well, evidently they're taking the dirt they're pulling out of the East Wing thing and they're dropping it off at the golf course.
They're dropping it off over there?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I mean, these guys, they're maniacal about themselves. It's all about themselves.
This is that sort of thing is lunacy.
Yeah, okay. Well, how would you, if you're a president, how would that enter your day at all in terms of your thought process?
You know, I mean, I know that Trump is obsessed with golf. Okay, whatever. But
he's obsessed with himself. Is what he,
he's yeah. obsessed with having his name on stuff. All right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's just kind of where it is. I find things like that to just be absolutely insane. This is me. I'm obviously not president of the United States, right? So there you go.
Yeah, well, we're not. I hear stuff like that. I'm going, you know, I don't get it. But because it's hard, I can't get over to the I'm going to talk more about the market here for a few minutes, but the Reagan tariff thing.
Right.
Now, my question, Carl, and this is, you know, whatever, I'm trying to be in the middle here, which means that I don't like either side very much. Why doesn't somebody, first of all, they play part of Reagan's speech, which actually I had heard a couple times before this thing even popped out. I actually listened to it.
Yeah.
And because I was always not a tariff guy. I mean, it's a Milton Friedman, it's a monetarist school, tariffs are a bad thing. Anybody who grew up in the Depression abhors tariffs because the Smoot-Hawley tariff thing,
yeah, which wasn't nearly as, I mean, that the you know, the blame thrown there is I mean there's
but it hit it, well, timing is everything. It hit it absolutely
yeah,
the wrong time.
And
it
but
hit
it,
absolutely
it's
the wrong time.
Totally misplaced that was the entire cause.
Right, but it when people were going downhill, it put the hammer right on their head. The timing
yeah,
was off.
I agree with that. Sure, yeah, absolutely.
So Reagan gives this speech, and he was reluctantly putting a tariff on Japan for computers or semiconductors, and all he did was talk about how he hated to do it, and the minute that they talked and could straighten out the situation, he was going to pull them off because he thought tariffs were a horrible thing. He grew up in the Depression, and they were bad, and free trade is the way to go because it hurts the smaller people the most. And now, so they played, it probably is a 4-minute tape, maybe five, I don't know, I'm not positive.
Yeah.
So somebody played like half of it. So Trump is regaling the fact that they took stuff out of context. Well, probably you did, but the message is still the same. Now my question, which I don't understand what is wrong with the Democrats, and I don't want to get like this, Carol, but if I had to, maybe it's my Italian side. Maybe there was a mobster in my past or something. I don't know. Why can't you play fire with fire? Take the money in the World Series, in the Super Bowl. Okay, bleeps. You want me to play the whole thing? I'll play the whole thing. I don't care if it costs me $10 million. play the whole thing.
Don't
let people come at you like that. I mean, why don't here's the solution. We took it out of context. Here's the whole thing.
Right.
Read it yourself.
Well, yeah, but see, that's not how that's the gotcha game in politics is never played that way, right? And then the other thing is that now I don't know what Canadian law looks like. Okay, I have no idea. But in the United States,
it's the same as ours. It came from Britain.
Well, actually, it's not the same.
Well, I'm not identical, but the thought behind it is the same.
Right. I'm just saying it's absolutely not the same as ours. But in the United States,
the repricing of assets that were put on the bonus stream.
That must be Kenny.
Yeah. So in the U.S. anyway, the only person who has a right to get involved in foreign policy is the office of the president. That's it. Okay. So states do not have the ability to do this. It's actually illegal under the Constitution to do that. I don't know if Canada has that restriction or not, but because what happened here in this instance was not the Canadian federal government, it was Ontario.
Why can't they run a commercial?
Well, for the same reason, because, well, I don't know. Maybe in Canada you can, all right? Like I said, I don't know what Canadian law has to say about this. In the U.S., that is absolutely verboten. You could not have the state of Texas run an ad attempting to influence foreign policy with regards to trade with China.
I think they get away with it.
I bet they don't. And they'd be crazy to do it.
Yeah, it's a little.
Well,
we got a dash to Kenny. We'll kick around the rest of this stuff on Friday. So, are you? How did your pinball thing go?
Oh, that was fantastic. That's that was great. And then did a little playing around down in Florida for a few days, and now here we are.
Good for you. All right, SP Futures up. Well, at least you're not in Jamaica.
Oh, good God. Well, you have to be you really had to be a special brand of crazy to. And by the way, all the people run around saying, oh, it's climate. No, it's not. You haven't had any storms in the Caribbean Basin all summer, right? There's a lot of energy down there.
What,
no shock,
what,
right?
What determines, Kenny in a second, what determines this thing? It reminds me of, I'm remembering some hurricanes. Reminded me of Hurricane Gloria, where it was incredibly intense, but it was actually very narrow. And some of them aren't quite as intense, but they're hundreds of miles wide. In effect, this thing's actually pretty small, but it's deadly, but it's not very big.
Yeah, well, the larger it is, of course, the area required, the energy has to be over, over a given area. So the smaller it is, its total energy, although from your standpoint, it's the wind and wave impact where you are, not the larger the area. But yeah, this is, and again, it looks like, I got another month to go, but it looks like we indeed, my prediction that I made early in the season that we were not going to have any hits on the mainland U.S. is going to hold up.
Well, I hope
I didn't
you're right.
Say no storms. I just said
right now you don't want to be in Bermuda. It's looking like going right for those guys too.
Well, although it won't be anywhere near as strong by the time it gets up there. But yeah, if you're in Jamaica right now, you're about to have a very bad day.
Well, it's 32 inches of rain. That'll do it.
By the way, Jamaica is a hellhole when it comes to law and order and things that. Pretty much everybody's house has a concrete wall around it with broken off glass bottles on the top.
Oh, good.
Yep.
Kenny, you with us?
I'm here.
How are you, buddy? You're long spooge yesterday, or are you still long?
Yes, I'm long the market. I am, and I enjoyed every minute of it yesterday. And look, once again, we're back in this story about, this trade deal. It's done. It's the framework. Everyone's excited. All that stuff. We know at any moment it could blow up. I'm not suggesting it's going to. But, a month ago we had the trade deal was done, and then it wasn't done. And then there was all this nervousness, and the market backed off, and then it was done again, and then it wasn't done again. So while I think this time maybe it feels like more it's done, that I think it's okay. I think yesterday's reaction.
Well, what do you mean when you say a deal is done? The guy's been, and not even long before Trump, we've had issues with China that are getting worse and worse and worse. There's defense issues. There's geographical
Correct.
Issues. There's all kinds of... How do you have a 10-minute conversation and say everything's okay?
Well, you're right, and I put that in my note this morning. Listen, there's still a lot of issues that were unresolved and clearly create potential disruptions going forward, but this latest conversation about rare earths, about fentanyl, about China diversifying away from China, that's been very clear. Look at what he did. He made deals with Australia, Cambodia, Thailand, and Malaysia, all on rare earths production and rare earths mining to try to take some of that, Chinese control away from the situation.
Kenny,
I think he was successful with that.
No, he was successful. It's saying he was successful.
Well, okay, but he signed all those deals, so it wasn't like he just said it and nobody did it. We all saw how he had the meetings,
okay, but
he signed the deals, so I'm assuming that's all real, right? I don't think
I don't want to get into a political discussion, but why would you assume anything the man does is real?
Well, I don't want to get into political
does this mean he signs a deal and everybody runs the market up? They front run it, and it runs up, and everybody's happy as long, which is pretty much everybody, my clients included. So but now stocks that were, 20 times revenue are now 25, but there's no chance in hell in the next 5 years for us to have a rare earth processing facility in this country.
Correct.
There's no chance. So what does a deal do? They're still going to be making the stuff over in China. If they want to cut us off next week, they can.
Well, they're going to make it in China, but he diversified it away. He just made that $8.5 billion deal with Australia. He then made a deal with Thailand and Malaysia, Cambodia, apparently, to do the same thing. So he diversified away the risk, right? So you're not so dependent on China.
What's the lead time for rare earth facility? 10 years?
Well, I think they are already mining and producing rare earths in that part of the world. I think certainly Australia is, because that was part of the deal. The other countries, I'm not sure where they are, but I'm assuming they're certainly a lot further along than we are, because we have all kinds of conservationist issues and climate control issues and people that don't want us, organizations that don't want us to mine it in this country, because we got plenty of it up in Alaska. It might be difficult to mine.
We have plenty of it in California and Texas.
Okay, great. But the conservationists won't let, they won't let us do it, which is okay.
We can mine it. We can't the processing.
Correct.
Is disgusting.
We can't process it. Correct.
It's disgusting.
These other countries are already mining and processing it. And so, there is this thing about global trade and, bringing these countries in and all that stuff, which I fully support. But I do support the fact that we took some of that risk away from China, that we're not so dependent the way that we are in so many other I would say shame on us
Happen. We've identified it, and we've got some voice over it. We're dealing with it. But the fact is, nothing's happened yet.
Well, okay, nothing's happened yet. The deals have been signed. I'm assuming if the deals are signed and the processes are in place, then it's going to start to happen. I can't believe he made all that. He traveled around the world. He made all those, all that hoopla about signing these deals, and then suddenly nothing's going to happen. I'm not in that camp. I'm in the camp that it is going to happen. Not going to happen tomorrow, maybe, but it is going to happen sooner than we could ever do it in this country. And so I think that's a positive. Certainly the market thought it was a positive.
Well,
the market reacted.
I think you're going to find today, if every single number doesn't have to be run by the Oval Office, We're gonna see a massive bulge in the money supply, because it's happening. And the amount of credit being the market is generating, especially with the margin debt going up $50 billion a month, and the amount of funny money in the system now is absolutely spectacular, except for the fact that most people don't have it.
Okay. And I agree with you that I agree with you. So that's just another issue that the market is going to have to contend with, and investors and asset managers and people like you and I are going to have to contend with. But you're aware of it. We talk about it. People are aware of it. So you try to protect against it. I don't know if you can completely protect against it, but you try not to get caught up and go all in and, oh my God, I'm fear of missing out. I got to get in. You have to be very methodical about how you invest your clients' assets, their money, and what you think is going to happen. And then you create that plan around your conversation with them.
What do you think of the stuff that happens? And obviously you got your finger on the pulse of the world quicker and more than I do, but I get stuff from listeners and contributors. I got this thing from Carl yesterday about if you were to take the investment in AI from the top like eight companies, and you got NVIDIA's only got like four or five really clients, right? That do it, what, 70% or 80% of their business. So if you take the AI investment out of the economy, the economy's down in a year.
I agree.
And yet they haven't made dime one in AI.
Well, that's right. They haven't made dime one in AI yet. You can't argue that we're right at the beginning. You know, we're still in the batting cage. The game hasn't even started, in my opinion, in terms of where AI is going. I think we're right on the forefront of it, right? And so, there's all this spending ahead of actual making money, but I think it's all moving in the right direction. You know, somebody asked me the other day, isn't this just like .com? I don't think it's anything like .com. .com, they had absolutely zero earnings. There was zero forecast. There was zero anything. All it was .com. These are real companies making real products, changing the world. That's why I think this is so much different. And while, look, Kathy Woods, and I put up my note this morning, Kathy Woods is over there at that Davos in the desert, that big Saudi Arabian conference, and she comments the same way Jamie Dimon has done it, Sammy Altman has done it, I've been doing it, you've been doing it, that we are ahead of ourselves. And if it doesn't work out, there's going to be a come-to-Jesus moment.
But what exactly, I mean, I mean, at some point, somebody who puts, however many billion dollars these companies are putting in this stuff, somebody's going to ask the question, okay, let's fast forward out 5 years. Who's paying us what for this? And how are we going to stay ahead of the game, and how do we get paid for it?
I mean, we never got paid for the
cloud never got anywhere near what people thought that was going to be for anybody.
Okay, I hear you, but then the expectations change and markets readjust based on then what it did end up providing. Now, listen, the cloud is certainly a strong business. You see it, everyone will start to see that tomorrow in these reports from the goats that are coming out at Google and Apple and Amazon and all the Meta, all these companies that are coming out over the next 2 days, Wednesday and Thursday, and so we'll get a better view of it. But whether or not the expectations today are what they were when it started is irrelevant, because the market has then corrected and accepted now what it is. And I think it's going to do the same with AI. I think right now, do I think we're ahead of ourselves? I think we are. And I've been stamping my feet about it, which is why I haven't been chasing tech. I've been allocating money to other parts of the market. We own tech. I'm good with it. As long as it goes up, we're great. But I'm not chasing it. But at some point, there's going to have to be a reality check. And is it what everybody says it was? And if it isn't, there's going to be a repricing of that risk.
I'm looking at the different ones, and obviously, when stuff goes up and your clients have it, it's a good day. Don't get me wrong; it's a good day.
They love you.
But I look at something like, I have no idea why Tesla has doubled in the last year, other than there's so much money in the system, they're all going up. The car sales are down, the profitability is down. I don't understand any of this stuff.
I don't own Tesla. To be fair, I personally don't own it. We own it at the firm in clients' accounts, but I think Tesla is more than just a car company. I think it's a technology company, so I think there are other reasons but I do agree with you that so much money in the system that they're just buying it because it's Tesla, and they're Tesla groupies. I never owned it. I never bought it. I'm not sure I completely understand where it's going. Like you just said, what is it? I think it's a tech company, I'm just not. There are other places that I can invest my money that we understand, that I understand better than that. Look, it's a great car. I've never owned one. I've driven one once. Okay, great. But I've driven other electric vehicles too that are just as great. That's not the reason I'm going to buy Tesla.
I know I've shown my age here a few times, but at some point, I think you have to look at a firm that. And by the way, when you have innovation. I'm all for it. If you can get in on something on the ground floor, put your money behind it as much as you can, and if it turns out to take off, you make more money than ever being just long the market, right? If you can find the right place. But someplace, somewhere in the back of your mind, even if it's 8 years out, 10 years out, 12 years out, you gotta look at a company that's trading $456 like Tesla, and you say, okay, I'm gonna give this guy or these people or this lady, looks to me like they're brilliant as all get out, and they got an idea here that nobody else has got. This thing is going to outperform everybody in the world, but in 10 years, someplace somewhere at $456. These guys better be making $30 a share and sending me a check for like 12.
Yeah.
And I don't see the future in any of these companies doing that for me. I mean, it doesn't mean they're not going to go up tomorrow, or if you know. But I mean, how do you look at like a Palantir? The thing is 190 damn near. Their revenue per share is a buck and a half. How are they going to make, you know, $18 or $15 a share and send me a check for five when their revenue is a buck and a half? What century is that going to be? And I'm going to be long gone.
Listen, you and I will both be long gone, so yeah. I'm not really going to.
So I'm
not going to worry about it.
I mean, I don't care if somebody's ahead of themselves. Right. I mean, obviously, if you bought Apple at $11, they were you got in quick, and they were ahead of themselves. They outperformed everybody. Okay, now what? Now when Apple actually does pay a dividend. But I mean, these other guys, they don't care about you. It's a whole different world, isn't it?
Well, I'm not sure that they don't care about you, but they certainly don't care. They're in the growth stage, right? That's what they are, growth companies. They don't pay you back. They don't, you know, they want you all in with them, which is part of the excitement with growth stocks.
But are they really growing, or are they just raising prices, some of them?
Well,
but they're not all growing. They're not all growing to the extent that where they're trading.
Well, maybe not, but I guess the market, as over these next couple of weeks, when we start to hear from these companies, starting tomorrow, you know, if the market doesn't believe the story, if the market thinks it's overpriced, then the market will correct. Because, you know, in the end, the market always corrects. Now, sometimes it overcorrects the same way that it overreacts. On the upside, it can overcorrect to the downside.
But in fact,
the market will correct itself.
It never corrected in the Weimar Republic. It kept going up till the place fell apart.
Until the place fell apart. Then it corrected.
Well, I guess that's a correction.
Right? Yeah. Then it corrected.
You got me there. Touche. I guess if we all fell apart, it would be considered a correction. It's not exactly the one I want to see.
And I hope I'm not around when that correction comes.
Got to be. Yeah, is the Fed going to just... We're going to write back to this 1% interest rates and just blow this stuff up?
I hope not. Look, I'm in the camp that I don't even... I'm in the camp that they should not be cutting rates at the moment. Because every time you turn around, you know, these companies that have already reported, 85% of them have beat on both the top and bottom lines, and their forward guidance is not negative at all.
Yeah.
And so the economy remains robust, and this whole idea about, well, you know, employment's on a rocky ledge. It is not. It's 4.3%, which is considered full employment. So unless the number's been false all along, unless it's been fake information all along, it doesn't make sense to me that the Fed's going, oh, well, we're so worried about employment. Why? We're at full employment. There's nothing yet that indicates. If I saw unemployment start to tick up 4.7, 4.8, get closer to 5%, then I'd say, okay, we got a problem. We're still at full employment at 4.3%. So this whole argument is we have to protect the job market. I think they're playing with fire. But here's the other thing. I think they also want inflation, to you and I discussed this too. I don't think they're ever going to get back to 2% inflation. I think they need 3% plus inflation because we have to partly inflate our way out of this mess. And so by cutting rates, they're going to stoke inflation a little bit. Watch what's going to happen. That's my idea, is that they're going to cause a problem because they're going to lose control of inflation once again.
Do me a favor, will you? Your old buddy. I've learned a lot from you. Stop looking at the unemployment number.
Well, okay.
You look at the amount of... If you look at the last two columns of the labor thing, you're going to see the people that are officially unemployed and looking for work, which is a totally screwed up number. Then you're going to see, which is like 7 million people, right?
Yeah.
And then the next column is the people that we don't know what they're doing, but they're not working. It's like 100 million.
Right.
So out of that 107 million people, somebody miraculously picks 7 that allegedly are looking for a job. We don't know about the rest of the people. Look at that total number versus the people who are working. And that we're now down to like 58.3%, which is brutally down. If you look at the amount of people that are working versus not working, that number is going to cause your sphincter to snatch. Seriously. Don't just look at the 4.3. Because the minute you roll off the checks, if you don't have a job, you're not considered unemployed anymore.
Correct.
Well, but they're cheating. You could be. I know a lot of people that have rolled off they lost a job 6 months ago that are looking harder now. They're not getting checked than before. So I mean, it's all individual. I'm saying, but look at the if that number of people working, it used to be 63-64%.
Yeah.
And now we're down to 58.3. If that number gets to 56, I don't care if Solomon is president, you got a problem, because 56% of the people can't pay their we got to get that number back to 62 or 3, or all these it doesn't matter what we're doing with Doge or any place, we're not going to be able to make it. You can't do that with that many people working. That's
I hear you. I hear you, but that number, whether you say stop looking at the number, if everybody else is looking at the number and the market is pricing on that number and the Fed is concentrated on that number, then it makes it difficult not to consider that number, how right? Because that's what everyone's looking at.
How does anybody know what the Fed considers when nobody's ever been in a meeting?
Well, I don't know for sure, but I guess you have to listen. J.J. Powell says, here's what we're looking at.
Well,
now, okay, so if they say that's what they're looking at and everyone else is looking at it, then you have to at least consider it. You can't just completely ignore it and say, I don't believe it.
Well, I definitely do believe it. I'm just saying that the interplay between the 7 million number and the 100 million number is more important than whether the 7 is 6.5 or 7.5. I used to have before they don't show up for work anymore, Kenny, at the Federal Reserve here.
Yeah.
Over the series, I used to sit and have cocktails with the guys from the Fed. And I said to the guy, one night, he was on the show a couple times. I said, how do you guys believe this CPI number? It's a pile of crap.
Yeah.
He says, well, at the governmental level, what you don't do is walk in and have five guys at the table start bitching about the Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers. You take him at face value, even though, I said, so even if individually you know they're BS, you're going to use them. He goes, well, yeah. So in other words, you're not going to have Powell or anybody come out and say, we've got to raise rates because we think the inflation is 4%, even though these idiots are telling us it's 2. I mean, he said, you're never going to do that in a governmental thing. But it doesn't mean people believe him. So it was kind of a weird answer, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it is. It is a weird answer, but listen. A lot of people.
But he goes, you're never gonna have the Fed come in and see the CPI at 2% and say, well, that's bullshit. We better start raising rates because we think it's 5. Even if they all think it's 5, they're not gonna do it.
Right. Right. Well, and I think that's gonna be I think one of the issues. I don't know if you saw the Kathy Woods' commentary this morning about not that we're in a bubble, but that there'll be a reality check if the Fed starts to raise rates. Now, the Fed's not anywhere near raising rates, but that's true. I don't think she said anything that you and I don't recognize. If the Fed starts raising rates, growth names are going to get crushed, including all this tech stuff. But we're not at that point right now. The Fed is on this. The Fed is on this cutting mode. Not only tomorrow, but in December and potentially in January and February of next year. But we'll find that out from what Jake Powell says tomorrow, and that's what the market's going to react on. The market is not going to react on cutting rates tomorrow because it's already priced that in. It's even priced in the December rate cut. It's really listening to what he says about 2026.
If they put 12% money into the system, which it looks where they're going, in the next year, the market will be up at least 12 or 14%. Except if Rick Santelli comes on someday and says, by the way, the 30-year auction is now like 6 instead of 4 or something, which is what. That's the telltale, but it hasn't happened yet, and people don't even that would be the problem. But I don't see it happening right now. They go out and buy the stuff. They're going to start increasing the balance sheet again.
Yeah. Well, and ultimately, I agree with you. That's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
That's going to be a problem.
But so it's not going to happen today. It's going to happen someday, but not.
No,
today.
but maybe with a new Fed chair. And look, I like out of the Wall Street Journal's got the article today. The five contestants, right? So it's Kevin Warshak, Kevin Hassett, which you already know, Mish Bowman, which you already know, and Chris Waller, all Fed people. But there's the dark horse in the race, which is Rick Rieder out of BlackRock, who I think would be an outstanding candidate because you know why? He's an outsider. He's not on the inside. He hasn't been playing it the old way. He takes a fresh look at what's going on.
He can't take a fresh look at anything. He's going to be, whoever it is going to be Trump's lapdog.
let's see where that goes. I just think love the idea that Rick Reed is in contention.
What if Powell doesn't? What if Powell doesn't resign?
Well, his term is up in May.
His term as a Fed governor is not up.
Correct. His term as chair, though, is up in May.
But right. But if he doesn't resign, there's no room to put the new guy unless somebody leaves.
I don't believe, after all this, that come May, Jay Powell's going to say, geez, I really feel like staying because this has been such a great ride.
I said, what if?
Right. Yeah, I don't. I think he's going to happily resign and move on his way. Look, the guy's how old? 75, 76 years old. Does he want this shit anymore? Day in and day out?
He looks terrible, too.
He looks terrible, right. So, you know, I'm sure his wife must be tugging on him saying, listen, get out. Let's get out of here and move on with our life, which I think is what he'll do. And he should do it. He's 76 years old. God forbid. We know what happens. People retire, and 2 weeks later, they're dead. Yeah. So, you know.
Anyway. So, Ken, where are you? Are you in Florida, New York?
No, I'm back. I'm in Florida this week. We had our big fundraiser last week for the veterans, the Headstrong Project.
Hey, good
we
for you.
Wednesday night, we had 900 people at the Pier 60 and Chelsea Piers in New York City. And we raised $4.2 million. They're still counting, but it appears to be about $4.2 million to treat veterans that suffer from the mental wounds of war, PTSD, not the physical wounds.
Hey, our lady who's been on a couple times, she wants to come back on maybe November 10th or 11th. I'll give you the heads up, even if it's not your day. She's the lady that does all the Fisher House stuff in Chicago.
Yeah.
And you guys be on together. No, I'd love to find out what you're doing. And
I'd love to talk to her. You know, it's an organization that, you know, began 13 years ago when Marines started coming back from Afghanistan. And one of them was a dear friend of ours, you know, basically said, this country has no idea what it's in for. And so we started this organization. And today, what started out as, you know, we raised $30,000 and we were treating three veterans at Weill Cornell in New York City has now turned into a $15 million business that we treat more than 1,800 veterans nationwide that suffer from hidden wounds of war.
What is the specialty of the one in New York?
Well, it started out with I'm not the clinician, but what they use a very special plan and treatment. They use EMDR. They use all these brand new types of processes that help these veterans really recover. And quite honestly, we have lost nobody. And when they come to us, these veterans, they are really at the bottom of their barrel. They are hours away from taking their life, which is a sad, sad story. But if they come in and they have to come in, right? They have to want to get better. And so the ones that come in, I am proud to say that we've not lost any, and they have.
Well, psychologically right now it's really bad. But she was saying that the one in Texas is their massive burn unit. The one here is cancer treatment and new arms and legs and stuff. But she says they all have somewhat of a specialty, the one up in Gray's Lake.
Our specialty is the mental trauma, right? The PTSD, not the physical wounds, because there are plenty of organizations that help these guys with arms and legs. I get it, but there's not a lot that help these guys with the mental wounds, and it's the mental wounds that drive them to commit suicide.
The two of you need to talk on the air, because she's saying that needs to be spread around the rest of the places because the mental problems are getting out of hand.
Yeah, completely out of hand. And now with all the latest government cuts, the VA is completely overwhelmed. And so we've seen a surge in veterans wanting our services, which only creates more of a need to raise more money, right? Because it's getting cut in other places. And so they're coming to us. And so we are working hard to raise money to serve these veterans. And last Wednesday was, you know, we raised 4.2.
Well, that's incredible. That's
maybe
that's
a little bit
though.
More once they count all the numbers. But it seems to be about 4.2 million.
Well, she gets an unusual view of the. She goes every Sunday and helps the priest at Mass, right?
Yeah.
But then she runs around to the guys who couldn't make it to Mass to serve communion.
Yeah.
And some of the stories you get there, they tug your heart, for God's sake.
Yeah. No. It's It
well,
is.
Well, good for you. We should have mentioned that on the show. Maybe some guys would have sent some cash in, even if they weren't there.
Well, listen, they can still do it. They can go to headstrongproject.org, theheadstrongproject.org, and donate online. All right, they can always do that.
Okay, but
maybe Veterans Day is coming. We're going to have another push for Veterans Day, so we can talk about it, you know.
Maybe we'll get Ricky or Andrew to push that out. Well, Fisher House got some donations from the show.
I hope.
Yeah,
let's
did.
Try it.
Yeah, okay, bud. All right, take care of yourself. SP Futures up 7, NASDAQ Futures up 45. Do we want to do a... let's go to Hal, and then we'll go for a break in 15 minutes. Hal, you with us?
Yeah, here.
We're here about all this veteran stuff.
Yeah, it's great. I'm loving the fact that you guys are talking about it.
Well, we're going to have Diane in on probably the 10th or 11th.
Yeah.
She said she'd love to be on Veterans
on Fridays, Day. On Fridays, I meet with other veterans, and we get to talk about our shared experiences, and it's really rewarding. And you learn a lot about yourself and your experience and things that kind of take you back to being in a war zone, you know? I'm obsessed with humidity. And before I was on the ship in the Persian Gulf, I didn't care about humidity. I was hanging out in Florida during boot camp and A school and a nuclear power school, and I hung out outside all the time. But after being in the Persian Gulf for like 6 months and being on the ship where we're making steam to turn a propeller from a nuclear power plant, the engine room is old, it leaks steam. So the humidity in the engine room was just at unbelievable levels. The temperature is 120 degrees, and that's in the areas where there's ventilation. The seawater temperature is 93 degrees, and the ship smells like Al Bundy's feet. And you're in the engine room probably 20 hours a day, either standing watch or doing maintenance or cleaning or painting. And from that point on, I didn't realize this, but I've been obsessed with humidity ever since. And it's like triggering, I think. And you know, when I talk about football, Washington State's playing in the South, it's humid, it's hot. These young, and I'm like thinking to myself, that's idiotic, because when I was in my teens, 20s, I didn't think about that stuff at all. But now it's just, I didn't realize this until I started visiting with these other veterans who have the same kinds of triggers. So it's really nice to talk to these guys. And they're older guys, they're younger guys. Some of them are grandpas, some of them are just getting married. And it's just a really good group of guys.
Well, if you would have talked to Audrey's dad, who made it to like 96 or so.
Wow.
He was World War II, but he was an airfield guy, because he had worked originally on the Trans-Canada Highway when he was young.
Wow.
So when he got drafted, he was a guy in some of the islands where he was next to the island of a Japanese bomb hit the airstrip. He and his guys had to run out and fix it, kind of thing. Well, then they're going to make an airstrip up in the Aleutians.
That is crazy, because I think when I hear about that, I think about the In Harm's Way movie with John Wayne and Kirk Douglas. Yeah.
Well, then he... They I don't know if he went up on a, I don't know, it was a troop ship or a submarine, whatever the hell it was, but they dropped him off in water. It was supposed to be like 3 feet deep, and it turns out it was like 12 feet deep or something. So everybody gets drenched, and it's friggin' freezing. Imagine that in the Aleutian Islands. And they said, well, we think there's a Japanese submarine around, so you can't start a fire. and he goes, a couple guys died from being too cold, and a lot of people had frostbite.
Man.
But he has the same aversion at age 92. Of being cold again than you are being hot again. Same
it's
thing.
Crazy.
But he's like, Audrey said, he never wanted to be cold. Never wanted to be cold.
It's weird how obsessed you get by it. And I still have dreams of being on the ship in the Persian Gulf. And it's like, now I know how hot the water was, because I took logs. I recorded temperatures and pressures. And I remember always looking at the main engine circ water temperature right out of the ocean. Out of the Red Sea, or the Persian Gulf.
So the cooling water was 93 degrees.
It was 93 degrees. That was the coldest in the engine room, is that water being sucked up through the Persian Gulf. It was 93 degrees.
And that's supposed to be your cooling water, right?
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing is, we were in the Persian Gulf for like almost, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 months. We were in that area from the Red Sea to the Persian Gulf for like 4 months. And we're going home around... end of July, I think we're headed home, maybe first part of August. And we stop in Hawaii. And somewhere about a week before we got to Hawaii, leaving the, you know, Asia area, we get into deeper Pacific Ocean water. All of a sudden, the whole ship cools off by about 20 degrees. The seawater temperature drops to like 68. And but we're still used to that just heat and humidity of the Persian Gulf. My buddy Sean and I, we qualified early on the ship, and they gave us special liberty when we got to Hawaii. So we basically had, I don't know, 4 days in Hawaii, unsupervised, 20.
God.
We got a hotel, and we got a
rental
car.
Good thing they didn't have ATMs back then, or did they?
We got a rental car, and we're driving around Honolulu for a couple days, and we're both like, hey, let's go get some Thai food. And I go, all right. So I parked the car underneath a bank sign, and the Thai food restaurant's right next to this bank. And I get out of the car, and I'm thinking I'm cold. I look up at the bank sign. You know how it flashes the temperature?
Yeah.
I'm cold. I'm putting on a jacket. It was 93 degrees at that point in time in the day, and I felt like really cold. That's how climatized we were to, you know, that heat and humidity of the Persian Gulf. It was crazy.
Well, I mean, these guys in the South Pacific during World War II, and those destroyed, none of them had air conditioning. They're all 15 guys in a little room. I mean, what are they? They said people, there were guys that slept in the kitchens because they rolled. There were beds underneath the tables. They'd roll out, and when people were done eating, people slept there. I mean, what, for guys?
Oh yeah, we lost the distilling plant for about, I think, 20 to 30 days. We didn't have any repair parts, and so we're down to one distilling plant, which meant no showers, no air conditioning, 93 degree seawater cooling the ship, no AC, and it stunk. I still remember the smell of the ship. I mean, it was like Al Bundy's feet times 500.
If everybody stinks, does anybody stink?
Yeah, everybody stunk. Everybody stunk. The officers' quarters, everybody stunk.
Well, I turned the battleship New Jersey over in New Jersey, go figure. And you duck into the turret. I think there were like, was there 20-some guys in the turret doing all these different, everybody had a valve, everybody had something to move something. I mean, none of them were labeled. I mean, to try and get people to get those things to work again, which they never will, but I can't even imagine. Everybody had something to do, and you're looking down there watching the guys throwing the bags of stuff in there. But can you imagine in a hot weather, the 22 people inside a turret, for God's sake? There's not even a fan in there.
The body odor is unbelievable. And then, you know, the funny thing is, a lot of the guys that I'm meeting with on Fridays mornings, one's an officer, and he's talking about military bearing and having a nicely pressed uniform, and he really liked that about the military. I'm like laughing because my experience in the Navy, in the engine room, all the mechanics wore these worn-out dungaree, they're basically hash pant jeans, with a white T-shirt that was stained with linseed oil lubricating oil.
Yeah.
I mean, we were just gross looking at. I mean, a lot of us had longer hair. We didn't come out of the engine room. We were down there for 30 days straight. We didn't see sunshine, and we smelled. And we were in that nastiness.
Could have been worse. Could have been a submarine.
Well, the submarines, it's a lot cooler, and there's more of a family vibe. We're on a surface ship. There's definitely a division of class. The officers live above the water line, and they have windows to the ocean. The captain lives in a freaking mansion compared to what we live in. He had blue lush carpet. He had his own cook. He had a
king-sized
bed.
Yeah, but don't those guys, when you're away, don't they have the little spot on the bridge that they sleep in?
No, the officers, that's two people to a bunk, and they have about a twin-size bed, maybe a full-size mattress with two desks.
I mean, in New Jersey, the guy had this huge thing with crystal and all that stuff, but then when you were away, he had this little tiny room with a cot next to the bridge.
No, that's not the way it was on our surface ship. The officers have staterooms.
All right.
And my office is about as big as one of the berthing rooms for about 20 sailors in bunk beds that are three beds high, and they're about 2 feet between each set of bunk beds.
All right,
we are below the waterline.
All right, now you got to tell us. We've got a couple minutes before break, and then you got to tell what is going on with this. The market going up. What's the Fed going to do?
It's just banks are making loans, and they're making loans to certain people, and that's creating money, and that money's flowing to people who can buy stocks, bonds, house, homes, real estate, NFL properties. That's where that money's going to. It's the Cantillon effect. So,
by the way, we've been talking about we've been going up. We were 80 million growth between May and June. This is in total margin debt.
Yeah.
80 billion growth. And then we went to only 15 billion between June and July, then 37 between July and August. Now we're back up to 60 between August and September.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never seen growth like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just the Cantillon effect. You know, when new money is created, and the Fed's not really creating a lot of money right now, but banks are. And well, when you know, banks.
When you say they're not creating, their job is to keep a certain growth. Sometimes they have to push it in, and sometimes they have to pull it out. They're not pulling it out.
Well, I think what the Fed is doing is they're watching like the flawed CPI metrics that you and Carl were talking about. They're watching that metric. I don't think they're really keeping an eye on him too. I don't think they are. I think
that's the Fed's only job.
I know, but I think when you talk about economists who work at the Federal Reserve, I don't think they think of inflation as the excessive growth in the money supply. I think they think of inflation as
if they're my age, how could you think anything differently?
Hey, you had a class with Milton Friedman. I've read Milton Friedman. I'm a pragmatic Austrian, which makes me kind of like a pseudo monetarist. And
you are Milty Light. You put this Austrian thing out there, which I don't even know what the hell that means. You sound exactly like him.
Well,
you're a laissez-faire economist with that has a serious amount of monetary thing behind you. It's exactly what he was.
Yeah.
That's what you are.
I think the people who work for government, the economists that work for government, the economists that work in the statistics departments of government, the ones that work at the Federal Reserve, I think they truly believe that inflation is the percent change in a flawed, what we know of as a flawed, you and I and Carl and others know as a flawed price level change. That's what they think inflation is.
How can it be so dumb? How can they be so dumb?
I don't know. I think it's just the training they get. And, you know, they truly want to do good. And when you truly want to do good, you're going to look at things that make you feel good. You're looking for confirmation bias. So you look at the percent change in the CPI or the PCE, less energy and food. Well, that's what you look at. When you look at that, you go, hey, what we're doing looks like it's all right.
My bro, who's a president of PTI and very bright guy, of course, being brothers, we argue about everything, right? He's still at the stage, I don't know, it's just... I'm only 4 years older. I used to feel just like him, and maybe like some of the people in the Fed now, where people do this stuff all for the right reasons. Sometimes they screw up a little bit and they miss, but that's and then they try and fix it as fast as they can. Yet I've seen maybe five or six of these screw ups, starting with when I was in high school, for God's sake. Every single time, Hal. Same result, the same people make money and the same people lose money. I don't think they're random. I don't think they're a little bit of screw-ups. I think everybody knows that putting this money in the system is going to make the guy at Oracle have $1.5 trillion and us have nothing. I mean, I don't think they're that stupid. Somebody isn't. Somebody knows what they're doing.
Well, I think what happens is people, through experiences, they learn probabilities, they learn lessons. They get salty. I mean, when you talk to an old mechanic, he's not going to give away all of his secrets, right? Because then there's no reason to keep him around.
Right.
But you have these learned experiences. You have these lived experiences. And you know what's going to happen when this happens. Or you know what's going to happen if that happens. So you learn. And you know where to put your money when certain situations are going on. I think that's most of it. I think people really don't think about it. There might be a few people who are manipulating the system, but I think for the vast majority of people, they know to do A when B happens. They know to do C when D happens. I think that's the majority of it. I think most of these people are probably trying to do the right thing. And how do you know you're doing the right thing? Well, you look for a metric that makes it look like you're doing the right thing. So you look at the PCE, you look at the CPI, and you go, hey, it looks like we're doing a good job.
Look at GDP.
Like we're doing a good job.
Can I agree with 90% of what you said before we get a break? But there's only one thing. When you have people that are so self-focused, they think that if it's the right thing for them, it's the right thing for everybody.
Oh, and also, you have a group of people that think similar ways. And this herd, the problem with being in the herd is when that herd goes over the cliff, you go over it too.
Well, the people,
a lot of this herd mentality too.
The German people who owned farms in the Weimar Republic thought the inflation was the most spectacular thing that ever happened to them.
Oh, yeah.
They took the money into the bank and said, my mortgage is done. And, yeah. now we have a German guy in the White House that is sitting there figuring out, if I can pay off all these golf courses with inflated money, my kids are the richest people on earth. And yeah. I'm gonna say that the rest of us will have a correction someday, but they'll still own the golf
courses.
But
Tom, that's been the case for central banks. Why do you think real estate in New York City is so valuable? Why do you think people hang on to the real estate in New York City?
I understand, but what I'm saying,
the Fed is there.
What I'm saying
is been going on for 100 years. It's not
a new thing. People have always, I use the term screwed up, but now looking back on it, you and I could have predicted what's happened. I'm not so sure they couldn't have either. But once you expanded the money supply after Bretton Woods to pay for the Vietnam War, and all of a sudden you get all this inflation, well, what's the first thing you do? You blame
Nixon ended the gold.
The first thing you do?
International transactions, right?
You blame it on the dirty Arabs for the oil embargo. That was a little bit of it. It wasn't the whole number. It was a little bit of it. And then you had other stuff. And finally, now you have everybody blaming Jimmy Carter, who's dead. And everybody forgets about the wage price controls under Nixon and the buttons whipping. But I'm saying
Nixon was not a free market economy.
Well, he wanted to inflate his way out of the thing. But what I'm saying is, but then you had a president, Jimmy Carter, who nobody likes, says we got to stop this, and they brought in Paul Volcker, and there was a retrenchment. Okay, and then a lot of the people who made a lot of money by things being inflated all of a sudden didn't anymore. But so then you had going up to Y2K, you had people that poured money into the system, which was a lot of the dot-com bubble. It wasn't just the dot-com stuff. It was the Fed putting money in.
Oh, it is, yeah.
So all of a sudden, but now what happened after that? Now, they started to pull the money out, and then all of a sudden the market went flying back the other way. Now, this time, the people up there that are making the money on it going, we're never pulling it out.
Yeah.
This is just great. I'm going to spend $8 billion on a football team because if we keep doing this, 10 years from now, it's going to be worth $15 billion, even though
every president I can remember is kind of critical of the Fed while they're running for office. If they want that office and they think the Fed is being too easy, they're going to be critical of the Fed. But as soon as they're in office, that tune changes.
Oh, sure.
And Trump definitely flipped in 2016 to 2017 when all of a sudden he was, you know, begging the Fed to keep interest rates low. But Obama, he had extremely low interest rates in his entire presidency. That was unprecedented.
After the 2008 fiasco, when he came in, and they were down there, and all of a sudden this inflation started, and all these asset prices started going up, and everybody loved the market up 8% a year, 9% a year. Yeah. S&P futures up 9, NASDAQ futures up 55. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello, no pay, Stocks and Jocks. I'm time out. Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 9. NASDAQ is up 54. Looks like we're going to keep going here. Not so much on gold and oil, but we've got the Dow futures up 234. Individual stocks. Sherwin-Williams had earnings last night. They're up $17. United Health, I don't think he had earnings, but they're up $17. I mean, this stuff is just rocketing up here. Another big mover to the upside, which hasn't moved in ages to the upside, is UPS, which has been a dead dog now for like 3 years, finally has an up move. They had earnings last night as well. It's up almost $10, up to $99. But that stock was well over, I think it was 200 a couple of years ago. But at least it's been a nice bounce today. A lot of people in Chicago have UPS stock. They worked for UPS for a lot of their life. So good for them. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 8. Wow, call that flat. FTSE up 20.2. CAC around down 6. So the last 2 days, not really as crazy over in Europe as it has been here and over in Asia. Let's see what Asia's doing today. Nikkei's down 293. They came back a little bit. Hang Seng, which was up huge yesterday, is down 87.3%, so not that much. Shanghai down 8. I'm not sure why those guys are going the other way, because it doesn't look like we are. Bonds, we're 3.99, so we're right at this 4% number on the 10-year. We'll see what happens the announcement tomorrow out of the Fed. The Bund is same thing, no change, 2.61. Oil, 84 cents to 60.47. Brent down 87 cents to 64.75. Gold, the down 77 bucks, 39.42 was 4,300 like 2 weeks ago. Silver down 25 cents, 46.52, so down, but not as much down as yesterday. Foreign exchange, gold, Euro, 1.16, so down from the 1.175 last week. And the British pound, 1.33, it made it up to 1.135. Crypto, down 750, 114, 199. Yeah, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:35 a.m. here in Chicago, 48 degrees right now with a high of 59. Some sun today, then increasing clouds and breezy tonight. Increasingly windy, overcast this evening, then becoming clear with a low of 47 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 63 degrees right now with a high of 94. Hot with plenty of sunshine. Possible danger of dehydration today if outside for too long. Tonight will be clear with a low of 68 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Emma Kennedy from Monroe's, 26 minutes. Edens from Lane Cook, 40 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 47 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th, 33 minutes. And lastly, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 51 minutes. Let's talk MLB. Dodgers win game 3 yesterday with 18 innings. That is the second longest game in World Series history, beating the Blue Jays 6-5 and leading the series 2-1. Game 4 is tonight at 7 p.m. at Dodger Stadium. Back to Chicago, the Bulls, some would say the Bulls had the best start of the season in about 4 years, beating the Hawks 128-123. Suns lose to Jazz, though, 134-138. Lastly, NFL, Thursday, October 30, Ravens at Dolphins, 7:15 p.m. Back to you guys.
Hell, what inning did you make it to? I made it to like 14.
I made it to Ohtani's. What's his name again? Ohtani?
Yeah. He was on base like seven times.
I made it to his last at bat. I thought he was going to win it in the ninth or something. I think he was up in the ninth. I was getting really tired at that point. It's like 11:30.
Well, they walked him in like the 14th and everybody was booing.
Yeah, it was that's what it was. When they walked him and then, you know, they got their out, I was like, man, I got to go to sleep. And then I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning and I had my iPhone next to my bed, and I turned on my iPhone, and my YouTube TV app was, you know, I opened that up, and the game pops up, and I watched the last. I was like, whoa, what happened here? Because, you know, I was near the end of it when I went to sleep, and then I was like, wow, it must have went into extra innings, and I slid the scroll to the end, and I'm like, holy crap. 18 innings? That's two freaking games.
Yeah.
I think what's going to happen now is I don't think the bullpen for the Blue Jays is all that great. And I think the Dodgers have the better bullpen. So I think them exhausting all those bullpen pitchers.
Well, they all did. 660 pitchers.
But I think the bullpen is stronger for the Dodgers. I think it gives them the advantage.
Well, I think the Dodgers can take it. Did you realize that they went back to the old rules for the World Series? They don't put a guy in second base. I didn't realize that.
They don't put a guy on second base for what?
The World Series for the next innings, like they do during the season.
They don't put a guy on the second base for
what? Well, in extra innings in the season, they start a guy on second base to make it.
When they start doing that?
Like 3 years ago.
Wow. Did they put a rule in that limits the number of throws you can make to first?
Yeah.
To three?
Yeah, you get two, and then the third one, I don't know, is a ball or something.
Oh, that's why the first baseman from Seattle is such a good stealer of second. He's not very fast, but man, he doesn't get picked off very much.
Yeah, there's some I've read them a couple times, but there's so many new rules.
In extra innings, they put a guy.
They want to get the games going. So
in the 10th inning, they put a guy on second.
The last batter starts the next inning on second base.
Wow, and then they limit the throws to first to three.
Well, then you got to the catcher can only out a few many times. They actually shaved, I think it's like 20 to 30 minutes off the normal game.
Yeah. And then they got a timer on the pitch clock.
I think it's much, much better watching, to be honest with you.
Yeah, definitely. I was shocked because normally when I watch a baseball game, last time I watched a baseball game was probably 3 years ago. And I was like, why aren't they throwing to first? And then an announcer said he can only throw two more times. So I'm thinking, they put in a new rule because I didn't know.
Well, a pitcher used to be able to throw it all the time while essentially the rest.
Yeah,
that
would just make the game last long. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The when Matty Weber was still the producer, he dug this article out for me that when you see pitchers, especially relief pitchers, the guys that want maximum effort every pitch.
Yeah.
You know, you want to throw as hard as you can, which, you know, people didn't do. They used to, you threw hard against the guys you needed to throw hard against, but they did what the hell did he come out with? You saw these relief pitchers go out there and they never want to throw the ball. And Matty dug out this some statistics somebody dug up that for every 15 seconds more the guy can delay on the mound between pitches, it adds like a tenth of a mile an hour to his next pitch.
Wow. Yeah.
Instead of, you know, if you get it and you throw it right away, you're still a little tired. You have time to recover. But,
well, you know, I think throwing to first, limited to three, probably helps that out a little bit. Because if you're throwing to first all the time, it's got to wear your arm out.
Well, not as much as, I mean, you could lob it over there if you know, if you're
but I think the motion, throwing it there, it's a different motion than going home.
Yeah.
Especially for a left-hander.
Yeah, it's easy for a left-hander to toss, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I see these stacks. I was talking to Kenny about it. I want to be perfectly blunt. I want them to keep going up every day for my clients. But I look at the valuations in some of this stuff, and I've never seen anything like this.
Yeah, I think what it is the Fed has very little control over the M2 growth rate because I don't think they're really adding much liquidity to the system. It's just there's a lot of reserves in the banking system, and that stuff is leaking out, and it's leaking out to people who can get these loans to buy assets at low interest rates. And the bankers know for almost certain that the loans they are making right now to these kinds of people, the people with means, they're going to be able to get that money paid back. So the loans they're making to these guys buying all these assets, they know that these loans are going to be paid back. And if they make loans to regular folks starting businesses, they're not sure that stuff's going to come back. And they can just lend that money to the Federal Reserve and earn an interest rate of 4% right now, right? And if you believe the inflation number is 3%, you know,
I believe it's 5%.
Making a reserve loan to the Federal Reserve as a bank, you're making your net interest margin's 1 percentage point, right?
Yeah, see, the risk is a lot of times where you don't think there's any risk.
Yeah.
And I'll just pick a stock because I happen to have picked on this one because, because I can't believe their revenue per share. Now, again, don't sell it or anything like that. They might be sitting on a silver mine, as far as I know. But I'm looking at this Palantir. Stock's trading 190. So today, if you wanted to, if you had an account at PTI, you could call up and say, hey, buy me 1,000 shares of Palantir. And I say, okay. Well, somebody here would say, okay. And he says, how about if I send you a check for $95,000? And we'd say, that's fine, 50% initial margin. So somebody is loaning this guy. RBC is going to take it, and they call it prevaricate. What's the term? God bless him. Anyway, you pledge the stock to the bank, and the bank lends RBC, which RBC is connected with a bank, so I don't know if they do it themselves or who they use, but somebody's lending you, Helsnar, $95,000.
Yeah.
Now, if the stock goes down $2 today, you're okay because the initial margin is 50, the maintenance margin is only 30. But if something bizarre came out, and, you know, pick any stock, not just PLTR, if all of a sudden tomorrow that is trades at 100, say, well, now you're down $90,000. Okay, so you've basically lost your initial investment totally. Now the bank is gonna, now you've got to get your maintenance margin up to 30, so you better send in a check for $30,000 to PTI, or RBC is going to make us liquidate you.
Yeah.
Say so that's how they're going to get their $95,000 back. But don't think there's, with this market running up, with this $50 billion a month or more, don't think that there's not risk there.
Oh yeah,
there's huge risk there. Now I'm really stunned.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if the Fed actually had some balls? And they, for them to come out tomorrow, and the Fed, by the way, controls margin rates. The amount you can borrow for stock, that's controlled by the Fed, not your clearing firm, not your brokerage firm, not me, not my brother. It's the Fed. And if they were to come out tomorrow and say, based on, you know, irrational exuberance or whatever Greenspan called it in the stock market, we want the initial margin to be 55 and the maintenance margin to be 35, which I think they have every reason to do right now. I mean, I mean, if the stocks are going to go up, if you find a stock that I think is overvalued, it doubles, God love you. And I hope my clients have it too, you know, that type of thing. But the point being is at some level, you're going to say 30% maintenance is not enough. We have risk here. I think we have risk here in the market right now. I mean, I really do. And when you see, like yesterday, the market going up, say 1.5%, and when say the market's, pick a number, it's $2 trillion worth in the market, which is way more than that, but say it's $2 trillion, you've just now added 2% more to quote value that can be borrowed against. So probably the single biggest asset people are borrowing against right now are stocks. Now you're not borrowing in IRAs, you're not borrowing in the stuff you have in your 401k at work. So not a lot of it's margin, but some of it is. A lot of it is. I mean, some firms we don't really have anybody that does this. But I mean, if you're going to go to the Robin Hoods of the world, people, they're going to buy 1,000 shares of something. They're never going to pay for the whole thing. I won't say never, but why would you? You come up with half of it, goes up, you sell it 2 days later. And if you're going to be a day trader or something in stock, you're never going to pay for the whole thing. Why would you?
Yeah.
So I mean, you're right, but I mean, so what are they going to have to do? I mean, if the market were ever to drop 40%, by the way, it sounds awful, but we're up 40%. You know, so I don't want to drop in 40. I don't want to drop in 2%. But if it did, the Fed's got their hands full with margin loan collapsing here. Not even worried about housing or anything else.
Well, if you're earning, you know, way above normal return on your money because you've leveraged your purchase, it's great as long as that continues. But as soon as that bubble burst, those huge 50%, 100% returns you've been getting on your leveraged asset purchase, they can be just as negative. So it there's a lot of risk. And I think the longer this run lasts, the less that an average margined leveraged buyer thinks about it. You know,
that's right.
I think the investment houses are thinking about it.
But you could have started, I mean, if you were in the right stocks, you know, I wish I could have put everybody in all the right stocks forever, wish I could today, for God's sake. If you were in all the right stocks 5 years ago and you could have bought $200,000 worth of something here at PTI or someplace, sent us 100, and the next year if you had the right stuff and a thing like, you know, say went up double, okay, so now you're up to 400 in equity. Well, you can borrow another 100, okay, because your equity is now 300, right? You can borrow another 100, and you could have ridden that first 100,000 to maybe a couple of $1 million in the last 5 years, but you're still hanging on this 50% where you're maxed out as far as you can. It's even more bizarre if you look at the futures side, and we still have a real lot of people that traded. Futures, especially here in Chicago. I mean, the Board of Trade here and stuff. I mean, but if you had a soybean contract, say soybeans are trading $10 a bushel. Well, the contract's 5,000 bushels. So what is that? It's $50,000 you just bought in worth. And the margin might have been back in the day $2,500. All right. So now there's no difference between initial and maintenance margin. So if it goes down 3 cents and you put up the minimum, we're calling you up and saying, hey, you got to send us a check for $400 type of thing. Now, nobody buys just one contract. But on the way up, if it goes up 5,000, if it goes up a half a dollar, you just made another $2,500, right? Mm-hmm. Well, now you can buy a second contract and be okay for that day.
Yeah.
So now you've got $5,000 up. But you know, you still have the same $2,500 up, but now you've got two contracts. So if they drop 10 cents, now you're deep in the hole, right? So you got to be real careful on this. And I'm really surprised I mean, if the market continues to do this, that the Fed doesn't say we're going to raise these maintenance. Now, the clearing firm can. They can always add to that. Like RBC could say, wait a minute, if you're in one of those meme stocks, what was the place that owned the movie theaters, like went up like 10 times in 4 days?
GameStop?
Yeah, GameStop. I mean, the clearing firm could say, hey, if you want to buy GameStop, you got to come up with 75% instead of 50. They're always free to add to the Fed's.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The Fed has the base number that everybody pretty much uses.
You know, those swings are even worse in real estate for a person who can buy a rental property with 1% down. It's even worse there. The swings are incredible. You can get 500% returns on your cash down on a real estate property. But if all of a sudden the housing bubble burst, you could easily see a 200-300% decline in your investment. So it's even more extreme in real estate, especially if you can leverage with 1% down.
Well, plus it's if you have I went through a lot of this yesterday with Audrey, where if you have, you know, a house that was 235 back in 2007, which was the mean, and you put down the $45,000, which could be your life savings, it could be what you got from your dad or whatever, or your grandpa, and all of a sudden the house drops to 190, the bank really doesn't care. You know, they care, they're going to lose the loan and everything else, but the 40's on you.
Yeah.
So, you know, and if you put 10% down, well, guess what? 10%'s on you and the other 30's on them. So it's a lot of this has to do with, that's why you have appraisals, that's why you have stuff, making sure that the thing is allegedly worth what you're paying for, allegedly.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people got upside down in those houses, and when they got wickedly upside down in those houses, they just kind of threw the keys in the house and walked away.
Well, you have nothing else you can do.
Yeah.
Especially
that same thing with cars. I mean,
well, especially the amount of
last thing you want to do is buy a brand new car, and then a recession hits and you lose your job, and you know, as soon as you drive that brand new car off the lot, you lose probably half its value. I mean,
well,
I,
not
I,
half, I, but
I know you lose a lot of it. You lose a lot of it driving off the lot.
Well, especially if you paid $10,000 in taxes.
Yeah,
but you're not going to get that back.
$10,000 in registration fees in Virginia.
Well, yeah, you wonder when everybody says it's inflation. That's why you can't trust the government, because they have figured out. I mean, when I was younger, the inflation they knew hurt people, and there was enough. I don't know. There was enough feedback from people to representatives and senators to where that was a big problem for them. Now they're really looked on to the fact that the biggest inflation winners are government. I mean, how many people were making a what's the difference if you make? I was just looking at the tax brackets the other day. If you make up to like $40,000, your tax is 12%, but the next 10, it's like 20 or something.
Yeah.
So if 4 years ago you were making $40,000, and now the inflation has gone up, you know,
8% a year.
Well, yeah, like, whatever. I'm saying, say your salary has gone up 25%, but inflation has gone up 40. Well, now your taxes. Plus, God help you, if you were, and I'm not, this is not a plus for Obamacare, but I think at 50, you stop getting Obamacare stuff, right? So the difference between you making 45 and 55, especially if it's the same amount of buying power than it was 4 years ago, you're screwed.
Yeah, it's crushing.
I mean, you're almost better off making 30.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty scary. It was like when I used to do the taxes in the 70s, where, you know, all of a sudden, 5 years ago, you know, you're making 17, and now you're making, inflation was 10% a year. So now you're making 25. You think you've kept pace, but no, you haven't, because your tax rate is now 20 instead of 12.
Well, I told you when I was a teenager, I worked for my parents at the Greyhound bus station in Lewiston, Idaho. They ran it, and I would do bank deposits, I'd plan trips, I'd do freight, I'd open and close the shop. I mean, they gave me a lot of trust when I was, you know, 17, 18 years old. And they would let me determine my paycheck each week. You know, I'd work about, you know, 2 hours a night, 7 days a week, plus 10 hours on Saturday, where I'd watch college football basically all day, and then about 4 hours on Sunday. So I was working probably 20 hours a week, maybe, if the buses were on time. And I would just kind of go through the tax tables.
Yeah.
And pick a number where my net pay was maximized in a reasonable band.
Well,
I was gaming. I was gaming at 18. I was gaming that at 18.
Well, you used to. They send you this big booklet, and in there, I mean,
yeah, it's a huge booklet.
But remember,
yeah.
You know, the rates were higher, but yeah. You had a lot more deductibles. You had every state had a state tax table. So if you were in Illinois and you made 20 grand, say, they'd say, all right, well, the Illinois tax is 10. You get to take, didn't take the entire 20, saying you spent it all, but they'd say you get to take $180 off or something, or some number. Or, I mean, 1,800, not 1,800. If it was, it was like 7%. You got to take, what's 7% of 20 grand? It's 1,400, right? Mm-hmm. You got to take that off for your... Plus, if you bought a car or something, where you say you bought a car for 5 grand, so you had to pay $400 in tax on the car, you got to take that off in addition to the table. So everybody had a boatload of deductions, and they were right in there for you to look at them.
Yeah.
So, but now I haven't done taxes in so long. I think if you go out and buy a $100,000 car and pay 10 grand in taxes, I don't think that comes off, does it?
I don't do my taxes anymore either because I started a business with my brothers. All three of my brothers are in the business now. I don't do anything. I might update their website this year. That's all I do. But I haven't done my taxes since we started this business because part of the agreement was I don't want to do my taxes. I'll summarize everything in a spreadsheet, and then you can do whatever you want with it. Because I don't want it. I hate doing that crap.
Oh,
I'd rather just have a postcard.
But I would like to know stuff I used to know about it. Let's put it that way.
I don't think
because then you still have this thing where you can only pay a certain amount of property taxes, but I don't think any sales tax thing comes off, does it?
Yeah. I don't know.
I have to ask my.
Been a long time since I looked at any of that stuff. Yeah.
But but you wonder who benefits from the cars being 100 grand. Well, duh, the state just got a $10,000 check, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, well, there's property taxes in California and Texas. I didn't know this, but like if you own a farm, they don't just give you a property tax on the land you own. They do a property tax on the tractors, the buildings, the diggers, the augers.
They have an asset tax?
They have an asset tax in California and Texas. I do not understand how you can be in business in Texas or California. In Texas, it's supposed to be a Republican state, but in terms of property taxes, it acts kind of like more like California.
Yeah, they used to have in Illinois. Well, I was real, real young, and they didn't hit up everybody, which is even weirder. They used to have something called a personal property tax, and it only affected. I mean, my aunt, she died in '63 when I was 11, so somehow she got involved in this thing. She worked for an insurance company. They had an apartment. They had one car. Her and her husband. He was a painter, and somehow they got. Some people were singled out as having personal property taxes. She always said she didn't have any personal property. She had a car and an apartment.
Think about the state having to they have to hire an army of like accountants to go around and assess farm equipment.
Yeah,
I mean that just requires. That's one real reason I like to.
Well,
Gary
do
Johnson.
They assess it, or you just have to?
They have to go through around and inspect your.
Why can't they just get it off your depreciation tables?
I don't know, but that's one thing. That's one thing I liked about Gary Johnson's message is when he was the governor of New Mexico, he said anytime he got a bill that would require him to start a new police force, like pet store inspectors to make sure that the pets are walked 10 minutes a day or something like that, he vetoed the law because he wasn't going to hire people to be inspectors. I kind of like that.
Well, okay, but... having said that, when I was a caddy, they had this guy, he was a disgusting guy. He had all these stores in Chicago, and all of a sudden he was out of business because the inspectors found out that his scales, a pound was really like 14 ounces. Well,
yeah.
I mean, you have to have something.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to have weights and measures. I mean, somebody has to check this out.
If a guy's really doing something fraudulent like that, I think he's going to be discovered, especially in the age of the internet. And then, as soon as he's discovered, he's going to be.
Well, if he gives you a half a pound, he will be. But if he shaves an ounce every time, who the hell's going to catch it? I can't.
Yeah. Well, I think anybody that does that is going to be discovered, especially in today's world. Like if you go to a gas station, and the gas pump says, You put in 40 gallons and you're like, wait a minute, I only have a 12 gallon tank. Or you put in, it says you put in 18 gallons and you know you have a 12 gallon tank. I would be like, wait a minute,
If you take it to that extreme, you're right. But if you're not greedy,
yeah,
you know, it's like owning a bar.
But the funny thing is, when people learn to do it, they kind of just they get a little squeeze in their budget.
Well,
they
some
start
people
budgeting it more and more and more.
I mean,
over time.
If you own a bar and you're supposed to buy all the stuff from the distributor, you do. And if all of a sudden you decide that you made, you know, you say you did, you know, 50,000 shots last year, and oh, by the way, you only bought 4 bottles of booze, you know, somebody's gonna figure it out, right?
Yeah. Well, bartenders do it all the time with their drinks, right? Well, their fancy pours.
Well,
yeah.
I'm saying is it? But if you have a big day and you go to Sam's Club and buy 4 cases of beer out of the 100 you're gonna sell, nobody's ever gonna catch you. And if you always stick with the 4, you're gonna be fine. But you're right. I mean. But,
you know, the funny thing is, Tom, you bring that up. One time I bought a 12-pack of beer from an Albertsons in Pocatello, Idaho, when I was in the Navy, when I was stationed at the INEL training students in nuclear power school. I went to the Albertsons and I bought this 12-pack and I brought it home. And guess what was missing?
A beer in the middle.
Some kid working at Albertsons drank one of the beer bottles.
Oh, God. Doesn't surprise me.
It was an 11-pack, not a 12-pack. And I went back and I told him, hey, You gotta check out your workers. They're drinking beers in these 12 packs, man.
And he resealed it somehow.
They slipped it out.
I got one worse for you. This could be disgusting. We'll leave on this note.
But hey, it was discovered, and I let the manager know that was happening. Right.
There was a guy at Hilo Foods where my first jobs were. You know those things that used to, the little thing of shrimp.
Yeah.
He'd pull the top off, pull one shrimp out, put the top back on. That was pretty bad. You know, they were refrigerated. I don't think anybody died from it, but God, it was disgusting. I was like, "What?" I said, "Eat the whole thing." Well, yeah, for God's sake, at least take the whole. I only want one. Okay. God, our people are weird, aren't they? I can only imagine.
Yeah, people will do weird things.
I can only imagine you guys
get away with it. If they get away with it and nobody ever catches them, moral hazard kicks in, and it tends to do what?
Yeah.
It makes it more extreme and more extreme over time, and eventually it'll be discovered.
We stole a 6-pack. Next time we'll get a 12-pack. Next time a case. Pretty soon it's missed. Right?
Yeah, if I hadn't told Albertsons that some guy took a beer out of my 12-pack, if I hadn't told them that, the next time I buy a 12-pack, it might have been 2 missing.
Yeah. And so one of these days, when I used to, I used to work on the truck docks, right? And of course, all the stuff would come in through customs in New York. It was long before you had, you know, you could... Well, all of a sudden, they'd be cartons with like 7 or 8 clock radios. And you're picking them up, and you get your body is ready for the how much they're heavy they are, right? So you brace yourself.
Guys are finding it on the side of the road, like in Goodfellas. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I pick one up, and I'm like, whoa! you bend your legs, and you pick the thing up. And all of a sudden, I go to pick the thing up, and there I pop up. I'm like, somebody must have taken like 6 of the 8 clock radios out of the thing.
Well, I go to Lowe's.
But it was all put back together like it was perfect.
When I go to Lowe's sometimes, I'm in the return aisle. I know somebody found it on the side of the road when they have like a 24-inch wide table saw blade.
Yeah. It's crazy. SP Futures up 11, NASDAQ Futures up 60. How many days does this rally last? We could have deal after deal after deal in China, and then
I have no idea how long it's going to last, but as long as the Fed keeps talking about lowering the interest rate it pays on reserves, it can continue to go.
That's the announcement tomorrow. Are you a quarter point or half point? Trump's guy is lobbying for a half point.
I think he's going to get a quarter point. I think Powell split the difference.
But today's the money supply number. I'm anxious for that. So.
Yeah, I've been waiting for it. And as soon as I get the new numbers, I'm going to update my quadratic growth trend.
All right, buddy, then send it to us. S&P Futures up 13. NASDAQ Futures up 65. Ricky, nice job. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.